everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you very much for joining me today. Just like the title says, it's all about food. We talk about food on this program. We promote a healthy plant diet. That means vegan. I do it primarily because I don't believe in exploiting living beings, killing animals, taking away their body parts and using their bodily fluids and whatever else we might do with animals that we like to exploit. But we also know that a healthy plant diet is probably the ideal diet for humans, although we don't have the proof that 100% plants is necessary, but we do know that a very high percentage of plant foods is necessary for humans to thrive. And then, of course, there's this environment we live in, our air, our water, our soil. And we're doing a lot of damage to this environment, not just because of technology and progress. And I like to put progress in air quotes when I say that, because it is kind of questionable. As civilization advances, we're destroying civilization. But the environment is being exploited because we are growing animals to feed people. And although it may not be obvious to some people how this affects the environment, there's been a lot written on it, and more will be written on it. And what's interesting is some people are getting it these days. A lot of people have been saying to me recently, people that I've known for decades, they're saying, you know, I'm really concerned about the environment. I really realize that this climate change thing, this global warming, is happening, and I'm concerned that we've reached the tipping point and there's no going back. And what are we doing? And I know that eating animals is a major contributor. And I don't even know how to respond sometimes, because I've been talking about this for a long time. What do you say? Well, I don't know what to say. Can you tell me what to say? But moving on, I want to talk about a lot of different things today, and I can only do this with the help of my best friend and colleague and co-founder of our nonprofit Responsible Eating and Living, and my co-host here on this program, It's All About Food, Gary DiMattei.
Karen, happy 2-2-2-2-2 day. It sounds like the thing we did in Fiddler on the Roof when you spit between two fingers to ward off the evil eye. Well, that's something that you do historically.
Yes, it's to ward off bad omens or bad things.
You want to tempt the evil eye? And you spit between two fingers.
Yes, but today is...
is 2-2-2-2-2-2 day.
It's 2-22-2022 on Tuesday.
On Tuesday. What foods do you eat on 2-2-2-2-2-2? We could do some historical...
Well, I'll tell you what food I'm not eating on Tuesday. I'm not eating tuna.
No.
No.
Unless it's...
like good
okara.
Catch or...
okara.
Oh, right. Remember that recipe?
Yes, of course. I love it.
There are many store-bought commercial brands of plant-based foods that simulate or emulate or taste like or seem like fish products. And there are tuna products that are vegan out there.
But if you've ever made soy milk at home, and that's fun to do, you have the leftover pulp from making soy milk is called okara.
Okara. We haven't sung that in a long time. Okara. We haven't sung it in a long time because I haven't made it in a long time.
Right.
But we like the okara.
It makes a great mock tuna salad.
It does.
It actually is better than tuna salad. But we won't go into that right now.
Yes.
But it could very well be a food to eat on 2-2-2-2-2.
Tuesday.
Tuesday. It's a historical day. So anything you eat today... make it a tradition, and the next time it's 2-2-2-2-2, which won't be until...
a long time. So here's to you.
Yes, and here's to
and
you.
And to all of everyone on this 2-2-2-2-2 Tuesday.
Chink.
Chink. And while we're cheering and yes. toasting,
let's talk about what we're drinking.
Yes.
Too.
So this week,
on this two,
we went to see a Juilliard pre-college orchestra concert.
Amazing.
And the last one we saw was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, just before the pandemic.
It was. It was the next day, basically, everybody shut down.
And they've had a lot of concerts scheduled and postponed and canceled. But this one, they were able to have. Of course, they checked that we were all vaccinated. We had to wear masks. But the concert is amazing. And I'm just telling you this, whether it has to do with food or not do with food, this is just something.
This is food for the soul.
Definitely. This is something in life that I think people need to see. These are high school students.
Right. Juilliard Pre-College Orchestra, led by Maestro Adam Glazer.
Who's a friend of ours.
Who was a very dear friend of Karen's brother, Barry.
Barry, who wrote the intro to this program.
Yeah,
it's all about food and the outro.
Barry is a composer, musician, and vegan. Anyway, Juilliard Pre-College Orchestra is impressive. Just saying Juilliard is impressive. One of the foremost music preparatory programs in the world, Juilliard Pre-College offers a comprehensive conservatory-style music program for students ages 8 to 18 who exhibit the talent, potential, and ambition to pursue music study at the college level. Okay, and it goes on and on and on to talk about the wonderful work that these folks are doing to get students ready for a life in the arts, specifically a life in music. I don't know about you, but it was really one of the best concerts I've ever seen.
They've played better than some adult symphonies I've heard.
It was on any level.
There were, I don't know how many violinists, 30? And they sounded like one.
They sounded like one. We kept
one
looking
voice.
At each other when they would play together because it sounded like one instrument was playing.
It was amazing. And the wonderful thing about the Juilliard pre-college concerts is they are free. And if you are in Manhattan and you check the Juilliard schedule and you happen to be in town, please go to this. Now, if you can't because you don't live anywhere near Manhattan, that's okay because they live stream these concerts. They're not available after the concert, but you can watch it along with all the people in the theater
right.
online. It's not the same. But I think you will still be profoundly moved.
Yes.
By the artistry of these young people.
It's all about food for the soul in this segment today.
So we went to this concert, but before the concert, what does one do? One has dinner, darling.
Of course.
And my brother made the arrangements. We're a little sensitive to the food. Three of us are vegan, me and Gary and my brother, and he brought his daughter, who is a viola player in high school.
Who is a vegetarian.
She's a vegetarian and also can't eat wheat. She has celiac. So we have to be careful where we're going to go. And originally we were going to go to some Thai restaurant. They were fully booked. And we ended up at my preferred place, which was Le Botaniste.
Le Botaniste.
Le Botaniste.
Karen got her way.
But Le Botaniste is a restaurant in New York. I think there are four of them now. We could call it a chain.
And it's owned by the same folks that own Le Pain Quotidien.
Le Pain Quotidien.
Thank you.
Le Pain Quotidien. Le Botaniste was started by Alain Coumont. He's the founder. And apparently, Alain Coumont is from Belgium, and the restaurant story starts in Ghent, Belgium, which is known as the vegetarian capital of Europe.
I did not know that.
I learned something new on this program every time.
Is Ghent spelled G-E-N-T?
G-H-E-N-T.
G-H-E-N-T.
Yes. And so they opened a plant-based organic food and natural wine bar in 2015. And now we have a number of them in Manhattan. And what I love about it is everything is vegan. Everything is organic, or at least mostly organic. And mm-hmm. and that's really hard to find, organic
like
and vegan.
90%, right?
Yeah. It's kind of a fun place.
Very fun. And first of all, when you walk in, you see the kitchen. It's an open air kitchen and the servers are standing behind it. So it's a walk up. There isn't a server that comes up to your table. You go up and you order, but it's very nice. All of the dishes are out on this flat top stove and they are stews and soups and different things all displayed in these really cool Le Creuset pots. Did you notice that?
I didn't. They're like porcelain.
They're all Le Creuset. Like all the different multicolored.
Cast iron, porcelain coated.
Yeah, very cool. Pans. And they serve everything in bowls. And it's really, really rustic cooking, but rustic cooking probably in a Belgium
right.
fashion.
And it's nice because you can customize your meal right. to some extent. They have all these different sauces and then they have a variety of different prepared cooked vegetables and potatoes and grains. And they have their bowls that tell you what the ingredients are, but you can move them around and make
sure.
your own.
I had a bolognese sauce poured over some, I was in a real, it was cold out. It was really, really cold.
It was really cold.
And we walked from the train station to the restaurant. And once I got in there, it was the perfect food for that kind of night. And
yeah,
it was a hot,
very comforty, cozy
bolognese poured over some pasta. I had some sauteed veggies put on top of that. Had a nice turmeric. And I think this was your point in bringing up
yes.
the Botanese. We are drinking a... Well, you let us know what we're drinking.
Well, they called them, what did they call them? Wild something cocktails or something.
Elixirs.
So they had standard coffee and tea, but then they had these drinks and the ginger turmeric elixir served with your choice of plant milk sounded good. And we each had them.
Yes.
And they were good, especially after coming in from the freezing cold, not just to have a warm drink. But a drink that feels somewhat therapeutic, somewhat, not quite medicinal, but it...
Well, the name sounds therapeutic, doesn't it? It sounds like someone in a laboratory.
Yeah.
I'm the botanist. But their mission is to provide pure plant-powered organic meals that are good for your body and the planet. And now, shouldn't everybody do that?
Hello? Shouldn't everybody do that?
Yeah.
Now, we have a recipe for a ginger turmeric latte at responsibleeatingandliving.com.
Good point.
It's not something that we've made in a while, and I was happy to be reminded that this is a really good drink to have. So we're having it right now.
Yes. Before we get off the subject of Le Botaniste, their approach is knowledgeable, playful, and engaging. And it was playful. All those different colored Le Creuset pots was very playful. And it's a bright and cheery atmosphere.
I want to say we went maybe 5 years ago to this place. It was relatively new and it wasn't as good. So I think they have settled in and improved because it was really good.
Yeah, it was really good.
We'll be back. Le Botaniste.
They call them reinvented pharmacies. I like that. So food as medicine.
Yes.
And of course,
don't tell the government.
Yeah. And their spaces are welcoming and... You know, a solo diner, and they talk about this on their website, a solo diner is comfortable, and it's also a place where friends can meet and share a bite. They have lots of organic wines and lots of elixirs. As Karen pointed out, we are drinking an elixir that we had at Le Botaniste that is for you.
I want to talk about what we're having right now. So when you make a ginger turmeric latte, for example, which is what we're having, you can use fresh ginger and fresh turmeric. You can chop it up and just put the little bits in there. You can juice ginger and turmeric. And if you happen to get a lot of ginger at some point and juice it, you can freeze small bits in an ice cube tray and just have the ginger juice on hand or turmeric juice. And then if you don't have access to fresh ginger and fresh turmeric, or you just want something quick, there's powdered ginger and powdered turmeric, and we always have that on hand. There is one tip, though. When you're using the dry spice and you mix it with hot water to make your blend, the spice tends to fall to the bottom. It's dense, and it doesn't always mix in. So serve your ginger turmeric latte with a spoon.
Right.
And keep stirring it before you drink it. Otherwise, You're going to get a very dilute beginning and a very strong ending.
Oh, yeah. So I was listening to your opening and it was so inspiring. Basically, I'd like to touch on a little bit of what you were saying, because you said something earlier before we went on the air. You said the stories are the same.
Hmm.
They don't really change. And really, it's basic what we do here at Responsible Eating and Living, but it never gets old because we have to keep repeating the same things over and over again to many, many, many people. But it's just, it's the basic philosophy of responsible eating and living, which is grounded, which is anchored in the simple fact that you founded this organization. You, going back to even before you founded the organization, you did not want to harm animals.
Number one. But then over time, as you're eating this way, and at the same time, a vegan diet becomes more mainstream and popular, there are more foods available that are vegan in stores and in restaurants, and some of them are unhealthy.
Right.
They're highly processed.
Right.
So while I'm on my food continuum, on my journey, and I don't want to harm animals, I'm also learning that we're manipulated and marketed to eat all these convenient foods in the stores and in the restaurants that aren't good for us.
And everything that we do here on the program, everything that we do at Responsible Eating and Living, is really the foundation that we're standing on that supports us is everything that we say is all about how we feel animals have rights too, just like human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Animals also need to have their rights. Because after all, aren't human beings animals too?
Oh, are we? Humans have tried so hard to distance themselves from the fact that we're animals.
So if the stories continue to be the same and the questions continue to be the same, if you anchor the responses simply with that foundation that, you know, we do everything we do because we feel that animals should have rights too, and we keep trying to ground our message with that simple fact, I think you have to keep saying it because folks do disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
There is a major disconnect.
It's really
easy. And like you said, I mean, you know, people are trying to distance themselves from even saying that they are animals. They've been doing that forever.
Here's what I wish. People who have been listening to this program, you know what I always say. I'm here to make vegans. Priority number one, I want people to stop exploiting, period. Exploiting animals, and that includes humans, non-human animals, and humans, because we do plenty of exploiting of people too. And it's interesting that in the animal agriculture industry, where people are being used to raise animals for food and slaughter them, they're the worst treated of all possible industries for people to work in, the people that work.
And they're not only tortured, obviously, for the gain of humans. I mean, let's face it, animals are tortured so that humans can eat them. Many animals are being tortured in labs for experiments.
Mm-hmm.
We find ourselves continuing to talk about it. A lot of folks find it really surprising when we say that we don't eat animals. And they just think, well, I could never give up cheese, or I could never. And, you know, we talk about this all the time, but as recently as yesterday, someone said that to us.
Yep.
You have to keep saying these things over and over again. I know a lot of folks are now realizing that, as you pointed out earlier, they want to save the planet, but they don't want to go as far as to stop eating animals.
Yeah, and you can't. If you want to save the planet, and that what I think people mean when they mean they want to save the planet, they want to save humanity and other life on Earth.
Yeah, exactly. Save humanity.
Because the Earth is going to be fine with or without us, okay? The Earth is right now working to get rid of us with crazy weather and plagues.
Right.
And who knows, as the population increases, the human population increases, sometimes I think we've got some kind of programming in our DNA that makes us extremely nutty when there are too many people on the planet, and then we start fighting each other.
Right.
I have no evidence of that. No, but I see.
That's okay. It's a good visual, though.
But all we hear is all this polarization, all these two-sided stories. There's no compromise anymore. You're either with us or against us. You're either on this side or that side.
Well, at least there seems to not be any compromise if you watch the news. But I know a lot of people are trying to compromise.
But the point is, yes, we're having global warming. And one of the best things we can do right now is stop eating animals.
Stop using and abusing animals, too. I mean, the use of animals for so many things. There's here in New York City, there's animals that pull the hansom cabs around, and there's been a debate about that forever. We're still using animals in circuses. Some cities have banned circuses, like circuses with animals, like New York. Hunting of animals for sport. People are still trying to push that agenda because they say, well, there's too many of something, so we're going to go ahead and allow you to go out and shoot those animals for entertainment. You know, all of this. I mean, I sound like a sixth grader doing a speech in my English class, but all of these things should be abolished. And so we have to keep coming back to that when we talk to people about what our work is. It's not really only about food.
Food is the biggest thing, I think. Food is the biggest. And the thing that we can address immediately. Gary.
Yes.
Do you know what this month is? I have two things to talk about for February. Number one, it's Veguary.
Veguary.
Remember Veguary? The Afro-Vegan Society is back for the second year hosting Veguary, a vegan program highlighting the contributions, richness, and diversity of Black culture. And although it's 2/22/2022, you can still go to the AfroVeganSociety.org and sign up for their Veguary events. There's one every day, and they're fun.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, and it's also Black History Month, so that ties in nicely.
Exactly. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about is that it's National Children's Dental Health Month, and this February it's sponsored by the American Dental Association. And you can go to their website, and they have all kinds of wonderful resources and things. I only know about it because my health insurance sends out all these fun things to engage the community.
Wow.
And we have Monday musings and surveys. And whenever I go and engage, I I always have something negative to say.
Not you.
Yeah, I do.
Oh, wow.
And so they gave us this page, Health Topic of the Month, Dental Care. And I'm really passionate about dental care. I have to admit, I wasn't passionate about dental care most of my life, and I regret it. Right. I regret it.
Right.
We should all take care of our teeth from day one. And if you have children, please don't listen to the American Dental Association. Just listen right now to what I have to say about dental hygiene.
To the American Karen Association.
Yeah, right. So they have this nice little poster, tips for a healthy smile. Good dental hygiene will help you have good breath, a nice smile, fewer cavities, and fewer dental problems. Brush your teeth at least twice a day with fluoride toothpaste.
No.
Okay. The science on fluoride is mixed. I avoid fluoride. I think it's toxic and I don't want it in my body, period. We distill it out of our water. We don't use fluoride toothpaste.
No fluoride.
I don't think it's good. Then it says floss your teeth at least once a day. Very good. And here's my favorite part. Eat a variety of fruits and vegetables.
Hooray.
Applause. Hooray. Grains, including bread, cereals, and other grain products. This is okay. I would rather that it said dark leafy green vegetables and mushrooms, but grains are okay unless you have a weight problem because you want to back off on those grains to lose weight. But here's the stuff that I really have a problem with. Protein, including meat, poultry, fish, and beans.
They snuck beans in there, didn't they?
Yeah, they stuck beans in there because I think they have to these days. But what is this? This drives me crazy when they talk about protein.
I know, it makes you wacky.
I've complained about it at restaurants when you go and like True Food Kitchen or some veg-friendly place.
Right.
But it's not completely vegetarian. They'll say, do you want to add a protein to that? And my response, which I bite my tongue and I don't tell them, although I might have told them once and
or
I got
twice.
Smacked, is that everything I'm ordering has protein in it. All plant foods contain complete protein. Well, so again, why do I have to add protein?
We're talking about things that we have to keep repeating. Right?
Yes.
Because we have the stories stay the same.
Yes.
And, as you said earlier.
And then we have the My Plate that our government has put out. So we've gone from...
It's not my plate, it's your plate. It's
whose plate? We went from a long time ago, the four food groups, which was a ridiculous grouping of foods. And then we had a pyramid. And now we have a plate.
Right.
And we have vegetables and grains and fruits. That's great. And protein. Where did this come from? Protein is a macronutrient. If we're going to talk about protein, we have to talk about carbohydrates and fats. The three go together. Protein, carbohydrate, fats. You can't talk about protein and not talk about carbohydrates and fats. You can, but it's just jarring and looks like you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
Okay, so because if I was going to redo this little poster I got in the category fruits and vegetables, well, I would say carbohydrate, protein, and fat. Mm-hmm. And then in the category for grains, I would do carbohydrate, protein, and fat. And then in the protein category that they have, meat, poultry, fish, for the meat and poultry and fish, I would do protein and fat. And
right.
For the beans, I would do protein, carbohydrate, and fat. So who's losing here? The meat, poultry, and fish do not come with everything we need. Carbohydrate, protein, and fat, all three, packaged with fiber. And those proteins that they recommend, meat, poultry, and fish, don't come with that magical fiber that most people
and
don't get enough of.
And you need that fiber. You desperately need that fiber.
So this was frustrating. So for National Children's Dental Health Month, we're recommending, not me, of course, the global we here in my insurance member community, meat, poultry, fish, and beans. And then my favorite category, where does this fit in?
And beans has the fiber. So just start with beans and end with beans.
Start and end with beans. The next category is dairy, including milk, cheese, and yogurt. This is 2022. It's 2022. We are in the almost at the end of the first quarter of this century. And people are still insisting that we consume the bovine milk products,
right,
that are meant to grow a little baby calf to like a 600-pound animal in a very short amount of time.
Again, we're saying the same things we always say.
With hormones, growth hormones, that are great if you're a baby calf and you need to grow fast. Not great for humans, especially adult humans. This was very
frustrating. But there was a big lobby, which you were talking about.
Those lobbies.
And it's keeping this myth alive. And these are all myths. These myths have been dispelled. They have been proven to be false, yet people still like their myths. They like their myths.
Myths. That's a fun word to say.
They want to keep their myths. There's so many myths.
Myths.
And science has disproved them, and yet people want to keep them.
Speaking of myths, and I don't want to go too far in this, but I was on the Facebook.
On the Facebook.
And I was reading a post by a popular vegan leader,
uh-huh,
a leader
good
in the vegan movement.
Be careful,
someone,
be careful.
I know, I'm not going to give any names. Someone I've interviewed, someone who I've respected over the years. And he was leading a conversation that basically was saying COVID is not real. And we finally realized this. So for the last 2 years, all of this panic and people dying
yeah,
was from a virus that doesn't exist and we can't identify. And
yeah, they're just, you know.
And this is the vegan community. And I'm thinking, you don't know any healthcare workers at all who came home exhausted every day?
I mean, everybody has someone in their family who has...
Who got really sick or died?
Sick or died from COVID. And it's the same kind of nonsense that they were spreading about AIDS.
It's exactly the same.
It's exactly the
same
nonsense.
Now, I'm not saying that you have to believe in the COVID vaccine. I'm not saying you have to get it or not. This is not that conversation. But at least you could acknowledge that this virus blew through the world and had a devastating effect.
But again, these folks don't want to.
Well, they also take an arrogant approach, saying that if you're vegan, you won't get sick.
Wrong.
Now, there are some people that maybe are really super, super healthy, and maybe they're not vaccinated, and if they get COVID, they will have a mild case, and I really hope so.
There's exceptions to all of these.
Absolutely. And so part of what some of these people are saying is that the people that got really sick basically were asking to get really sick because they already had chronic diseases, heart disease and diabetes, and they were overweight, and that's what killed them. Okay. Yes and no. It's unfortunate that we live in a world where people bring disease upon themselves with what they eat. Now, many people don't realize that they're doing this, or they become so addicted to the lifestyle that it's really hard for them to change.
Right.
So I don't want to judge, but I do want to help.
Oh, sure you do.
All these people move over to taking care of themselves, because number one, I don't want them killing animals. But number two, I don't like to see anybody suffer.
That's a great point.
Oh, so when I commented on the member community for my insurance company, telling them that they're giving this archaic information, and here it is, I thought we were going to get state-of-the-art, top new research on dental care, and we get this recycled, tired, old, bad information.
Right.
And then I said, and I do have a tip in addition to eating a healthy whole food plant diet.
So you actually responded to this.
I did.
Yeah, I love how you do that. you're probably one of the only, you and like some other person out there.
No, there are people that respond.
Oh, to these surveys?
Yeah, they do. Some of them say, yeah, this is really
great. I don't
even
know where you have the time to respond to a survey.
It takes 2 seconds to...
You are so busy. You're constantly
moving.
So
my recommendation after my rant was water flossing. I said, why aren't you recommending water flossing?
Which you've talked about on this program many times.
But it's great.
Yes, water flossing is
fun. So flossing with dental floss is okay. And I recommend vegan dental floss, which is... almost impossible to find.
What is vegan dental floss, Karen?
So most dental floss, well, there's some that's unwaxed, but the kind that are waxed may be coated with a wax that isn't vegan.
See, these are things that you have to think about. Animal exploitation even happens with dental floss.
Yeah, so we use EcoDent, and it's not easy to find sometimes. So here's the little description of EcoDent, the floss that we use. EcoDent Gentle Floss. It's called Gentle Floss. I love that. Vegan waxed, no beeswax, and no Petro waxes. Gentle Floss is treated with 14 essential oils. Gentle Floss has the most eco-friendly floss packaging in the world. So unique, it's patented. And with 100 yards of floss in the package, Gentle Floss is up to 3 times more economical than other natural brands. We like it a lot. It does last a long time. The package, unfortunately, does not. So what we usually do is use the cardboard package until it doesn't work anymore, and then we put the rest of the floss back in an old plastic floss container. In addition to that floss, that string floss, I don't know, water flossing may be even better. We do both. But the water flossing is excellent, and children should be learning to water floss.
Oh, children would have fun with the water floss.
Yeah, like
shooting at each other. It would be so fun to see a bunch of kids playing with water flossers.
Yeah, but this is flossers. An excellent way to improve the health of your gums and prevent cavities. And it's a great feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
So who remembers the commercial for Pearl Drops?
Oh, God, that was really funny.
They would lick their teeth. It's a great feeling.
I'm not that old, but I remember my grandparents telling me about it.
Yeah, right. I want to wrap up a little bit on this National Children's Dental Health Month. What I think a better recommendation would be, rather than using fluoride toothpaste and fluoride treatments and eating meat and chicken and fish and dairy, the better recommendation would be to insist we don't eat processed foods. We don't eat processed junk foods that are full of sweeteners and other unhealthy ingredients. And the American Dental Association should be working with food manufacturers to take added sugar out of products or use less refined sugar wherever possible. Do we really need sugar in tomato sauce? There's sugar in everything. They add sugar to some meats. It's nuts. And sugary sodas should be banned in schools everywhere. If the ADA and the United States really cared about dental health and dental health for children, they would be making real recommendations that prevented cavities, not adding toxins to our toothpaste and water supply that might show on paper in studies that it made strong teeth and maybe reduced cavities, because we know that the real prevention is from eating the right diet that will make strong teeth and bones and prevent our teeth from rotting.
Hey, so I've been checking and scanning the different veg sites around, the environmental sites. And did you know, this is something that doesn't make page one, a recent study finds corn-based ethanol is worse for the climate than gasoline. Remember those fields of corn that we drove through that seemed endless on our cross-country trip?
Absolutely. Nebraska and Iowa.
And all of that corn was being grown for ethanol, right?
Well, we don't know. Some of it could have been for animal feed, and some of it could have been
animal
for ethanol.
Animal feed, the others, yeah. Sure. The other was animal feed.
And some of it could have been for high fructose corn syrup.
So there's high fructose corn syrup, there's ethanol, and there's animal feed.
All delightful things to do with corn. That's exploitation of corn.
Right. Poor corn.
Poor corn.
Well, for years, everyone's been saying, and I don't know who these people are, but I've been reading a lot about how corn-based ethanol was thought to be the fuel of the future.
Yeah.
And an environmentally conscious alternative to gasoline. And it's mixed with gasoline, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, a recent study came out that said, wrong, it's not.
Well, some say that using ethanol from corn has helped us become energy independent, where we didn't need to get oil from unfriendly countries.
Right.
Whose politics and lifestyle we didn't agree with. And that may be true. But it is true that it takes a lot of energy to make this stuff.
Right.
Before we put it in our cars.
So I just think that's pretty...
And it's polluting.
We could grow all of that corn to feed people. We have so many wonderful recipes here at Responsible Eating and Living with corn.
We do.
Starting with something that you just recently made a whole batch of, once again, our corn tortillas made with organic masa harina. It's going back to the basics, today's program for me. Because when I read this little blip in a book called Diet for a New America, how...
If we could reduce our meat consumption by like 10%.
We could feed the world.
We grow plenty of food. How is it we can feed 60 to 7 billion animals a year, and yet about a billion people are starving on the planet?
Yeah.
Or at least food insecure. How is that? That we can feed 60 to 70 billion or more animals, land animals, I'm not even talking about fish.
Right.
How do we do that? And we can't feed a billion hungry people.
It's heartbreaking.
Right?
And that's why we do what we do. It was mind-boggling to see all of the corn being used, being grown to feed animals when people are starving.
And there's plenty of food for them today. It's just distribution.
Right.
We're not getting food to certain people. So that happens in the United States, in the very wealthy United States, even here in New York and in New York City. There are plenty of people who are food insecure, many children.
Too many children.
And then out in developing countries, a lot of the farmers, the landowners, choose to grow crops like chocolate and coffee and sugar because they can export it to us.
And make a ton of money.
And make a lot of money. where they're not growing food to feed the people in their country.
And again, we have to keep talking about these things, and probably you and I are the only ones listening. We get frustrated from time to time, and, you know, you got to keep repeating. You got to keep repeating it.
Part of it is the programming. We are all programmed. And I was just saying this to you the other day, do we even have free will? Which is a philosophical question, and we're not going to go there. But what's clear to me is we are all manipulated by marketing, manipulated in many different ways, but we have been made to believe that making food in the kitchen is troublesome and time-consuming and unpleasant.
Sure. Well, they want you out of the kitchen, so you'll go and...
They want us buying food in restaurants and prepared foods in supermarkets, and they have convinced us that we don't have time to cook. And as a result, people don't have cooking skills. So some people who may think, I really should be cooking more, preparing more food because I understand it's healthier, but they're intimidated. They don't even know where to start.
Why is that? We took it out of the schools. We took home ec out of the schools.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I had home ec, and they taught us how to make pound cake. So I didn't really get cooking skills in my home ec class.
Wouldn't it be cool with all these cooking shows, though, that are on all of these channels and things, that to do an actual chef's program in some of, in high schools, make them...
Yeah, why isn't the American Dental Association sponsoring food shows to get kids to eat healthy and prepare food?
I mean, that would be a really cool thing. It's like we have these great schools that have these huge cafeterias. You could teach class in the cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
You could have the students working in the cafeteria,
mm-hmm.
learning how to make food. Do they even have cafeterias anymore?
Well, that's another thing. Many cafeterias, the food... that they prepare, it's just open a box and mix it with water, open
right,
a can,
I mean,
and heat
really,
it up. They're not even preparing
really
foods in many places.
Really make a point to tie that in with what's going on in learning how to cook.
But I'm hoping, at least here in New York City, now that we're having Vegan Fridays,
right,
that they will be preparing more fresh food.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the future of New York with Mayor Adams on board.
Me too.
It's really going to be exciting.
I know a lot of people are criticizing him.
Sure.
And it's a funny thing. Okay. New York City, it's, I like to say, the greatest city in the world. At least it's one of the greatest cities in the world. It's a big city, a lot of people in a small place. And a lot of things happen here, and a lot of great things come out of this city. I don't even know if we're through with the pandemic and it's becoming endemic, but for the last 2 years now, things have been really challenging. And a new mayor is here, and he's supposed to, what, blink and make everything better like
yeah,
that?
Of course.
Change is hard, and it takes time.
And we're going to give him the time he needs.
We're going to give him 2 weeks.
we're going to give him a couple of days, and then we'll see how he does. We were walking around yesterday around City Hall, and that's an intimidating area of Manhattan.
Yeah, all those
I mean, if
columns.
I were the mayor and I had to look at those, just that one little...
You want me to work here?
I'm going to work in this place? This is amazing.
It's pretty impressive, right?
Impressive and intimidating. I wish him well. And I know he'll do a great job. He's already starting to. Speaking of intimidating buildings, Las Vegas has some intimidating
mm-hmm.
buildings. And it's getting a new restaurant. And
ooh.
I'm really excited about it. Not far from Los Angeles is Las Vegas. Tal Ronan has a restaurant in LA called Crossroads Kitchen. I think it's a vegan fine dining restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And it attracts a lot of celebrities. Joaquin Phoenix eats there. All the big LA vegans. And vegans from around the world go there. It's this really cool place. And Tal Ronan is opening one in Las Vegas.
Ooh. Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, that's a reason to go to Las Vegas.
Now, we know because I interviewed the author Paul Graham, Eating Vegan in Vegas. There are a lot of vegan places
right.
in Las Vegas, lots of places to get vegan options. And this has been going on for a long time. And we know Steve Wynn, who owned casinos in Vegas, became vegan and was offering menus at his restaurants that were vegan.
It's hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that they don't have a fine dining.
Vegan only
restaurant. I mean, so this is exciting.
This is exciting.
Very exciting. Tal Ronan's an amazing chef. Not recently, but a few years ago, we ate Tal's cooking at the James Beard House.
Right.
That's a historical place and was so mind-blowing for me to walk into Mr. Beard's home, where they now keep it going as it's a nonprofit organization. I don't know too much about the Beard Foundation other than they give awards to chefs and they have these dinners and they do these wonderful things. Check them out. Of course, not everything they do is vegan, but once in a while they do a vegan night.
There was a time when they didn't do anything vegan.
Right.
But now they do one maybe once a year, twice a year.
And Tal was in James Beard's home cooking all for all of us this wonderful vegan meal. Anyway, and Karen has interviewed Tal on the show before. And he's written a bunch of cookbooks and has something to do with Kite Hill cheese and all kinds of other things. And now he's got his fabulous Crossroads restaurant. He's a New York Times bestselling author, previously worked as a personal chef for Oprah Winfrey.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. Who named him the best vegan chef in America, but he was probably the only vegan chef in America.
No.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, but he's good, and he's a nice guy.
He catered a bunch of high-profile weddings, like Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi's wedding and way back in 2008. Anyway, he's opening Crossroads in Las Vegas, and it's doing really well in L.A.
So maybe it's time to go to Las Vegas.
I think so. At the very least, we have to go to L.A.
We've been talking about this for years, and somehow we go to Northern California several times a year, and we never can make it south.
Well, we're going to, next trip we're going to go to.
There is so much food to eat there.
Yeah. Now, apparently this restaurant, Crossroads, is opening in late spring, and it's going to be in a new location called Resorts World Las Vegas. I haven't been to Vegas in maybe 20 years.
I haven't been there since 1982. That's 40 years. It's time to go.
Right. And the weather's supposed to be awfully hot there.
Yeah, now that it's cold here.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But, you know, Tal, he's a really clever chef. He does a lot of really cool things.
We had something, remind me because I'm not remembering, but it was like an egg yolk. He did something with an egg yolk. What was that?
That was stunning. It was made with a yellow tomato in it.
It
was this little dollop on top of the pasta, just like an egg yolk, and you could pierce it. And it was done with liquid nitrogen or something. They dropped this yellow tomato puree into a little liquid nitrogen, or they did something with a blowtorch. I don't know, but they made this little skin around this dollop of this creamy yellow tomato goo. And they put it on top of this fresh pasta, and it was like you were piercing an egg yolk that then dripped throughout the pasta. It was really amazing.
It was amazing. It was fun.
Yeah.
Maybe silly, but art. It was art.
It was artful. He's also a very humble guy because at the Beard dinner at the James Beard House, I asked about the egg yolk because he was taking questions after the dinner, you know, when the chef comes out and everybody applauds and does anybody have any questions? And I said, what about that egg yolk? And he said, well, that's not mine. Oh, right.
I remember that was Michael Voltaggio that Tal Ronan had asked for help to do that one. Michael Voltaggio had won Bravo's Top Chef, and then he started his own restaurant. Hey, since you brought up eggs, or maybe I brought up the egg, can we just talk about eggs before we wrap this program up?
Okay, let's wrap it up with some eggs.
Because before, when I was talking about the recommendations by the American Dental Association, they were recommending meat and chicken and fish and dairy. They didn't mention eggs, and I'm not sure why.
Right.
But someone recently asked me if it was okay to eat a ton of eggs.
I remember this conversation.
And he was eating raw eggs.
He was eating raw eggs.
And I asked him why, and he basically said because they're inexpensive. They're cheap. And he didn't want to spend a lot of money on food. And he was concerned about a number of different things. And my immediate reaction was, eat beans.
Right.
Okay, beans are cheap. And beans, as we were talking about earlier in this program, beans have what? What macronutrients? Protein, carbohydrate, fat. Okay, eggs are loaded with cholesterol and fat and have some protein in it too. But eggs are not healthy. We don't need all that cholesterol and all that fat and all that protein. People have called it the incredible edible egg. Some people have said it's a perfect food. It's not a perfect food. It's for a little baby chicken to get some nourishment while it's growing and then break out of its shell and become a chick. And the problem is eggs may appear to be inexpensive, but we're all paying the price. We're paying the price in subsidies with our tax dollars, and we're paying the price with the damage to our environment.
Yes.
Because raising chickens for food, raising chickens for eggs, is also contributing to environmental destruction.
And the poor chickens are just being tortured, even though now egg-laying hens are supposed to be out of the cages and...
Yeah, some places have passed laws to get the chickens out of the cages.
Really? Have you ever...
But they're not really free and roaming. They're still crammed. They're still walking all over their own crap. They're still being de-beaked.
If you really want to read up on what these poor birds go through... Karen has interviewed
Dr. Karen Davis of the United Poultry Concerns.
Yes, on this program. Read Dr. Karen Davis's books.
But the point is there's so much misinformation out there where somebody thinks I'm going to eat a lot of eggs because they're cheap. They're not a nutritious food.
Again, we're wrapping this up, but we're going back to the basics. And the basics are don't eat eggs. They're going to kill you, but don't eat eggs because it's exploiting chickens.
It's exploiting chickens. And chickens are smart.
Yes.
They're not dumb, as many of our expressions make us believe they are.
You're doing harm when you eat an egg.
And then the wonderful bean, and we're supposed to be eating a variety of foods. Diversity in our diet is very important. We don't want to be eating the same thing. And when you're eating beans and legumes, there's like tens of thousands of varieties.
I know. We have like 20 in our house right now, varieties of dried beans.
Yeah.
Lentils and...
Different kinds of lentils. There are pink lentils and green lentils and brown lentils and yellow lentils. And then there are pink beans and red beans and yellow beans and speckled beans.
And there's things,
all different kinds.
There's things that disguise themselves as beans, like split peas. They're dry, so we think that they fall into the bean category. But they're not a bean. They're a pea.
Yeah. Something like that. They're all good. They're all legumes.
Don't get them confused.
They're all good, and they're all inexpensive. And you can even buy them organic, and they're still going to be pretty inexpensive. So this is a great food.
If you want to eat eggs, take some pink lentils or yellow lentils, whichever you call them. Soak them. I've talked about this before. Put them in a blender. Add a little water. You have yourself a great batter for an egg-based dish. It makes an excellent frittata. And then if you want it to taste that sulfury thing that comes back on you when you belch after you eat an egg, just get a little black salt. And I know Karen doesn't do salt, but a little grind of black salt, and it gives it that sulfur taste. It works a charm.
Yeah, I can skip that.
Well, you could skip the salt part, but you make a great lentil crepe.
Thank you, Gary.
Which is...
I think it's fun to make crepes. That's all. I make crepes and buckwheat crepes.
Doesn't that make a nice omelet?
It does.
Yeah.
And garbanzo bean flour makes a nice omelet, too.
But I think the lentil that works...
You like it better.
...better than the garbanzo.
It has an eggier flavor.
It does. It has an eggier flavor. Yeah. It makes a better frittata. You pour that over some sautéed greens and you bake it in the oven. It really...
Well, I'm looking at some red lentils right now and I'm thinking maybe that's on tomorrow's menu.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, Gary, it's been a delightful time spending... 2/22/2022 Tuesday with you too.
I agree. Thanks, Karen. Thanks for everything.
And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you, PRN, for being there.
Yes, thank you, PRN. And thank you, Rodney, whom I haven't met yet, but thank you for being there.
Thank you, Rodney.
Remember, you can always find us at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Comments and questions go to info@realmeals.org. We always enjoy hearing from you. Thanks again for listening, Gary.
See you in Vegas, Karen.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
Opening night of Tal Ronan's restaurant. What do you say?
Let's go.
Get in touch with Tal. Tell him we want a table for two. Two, 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 two. We want a table for two, 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 two,